people find wisdom in a variety of places. Folk tales, sacred texts, nature, people, music. I add to that list popular culture, specifically movies and TV shows, and in particular those which I find both well-written and which speak to something deeper than just entertainment. I count among those Star Trek, MASH, and, well, in a nod to the nation's celebration of Independence Day tomorrow, The West Wing. Now, you may know this story from an episode called Noel, but it's worth the telling. This guy's walking down the street, and he falls into a hole. And he can't get out. He tries and tries, and he struggles to get out of the hole. And he can't. And he sees a doctor walk by. "Hey, doc, I'm down this hole. Can you help me out?" Doctor writes a prescription, tosses it into the hole. A little while later, he sees a priest go by. "Hey, father, I'm stuck down this hole. Can you help me out?" Priest writes out a prayer, throws it down the hole, moves on. Guy doesn't know what to do. Then he sees a friend. "Hey, Joe, I'm stuck down this hole. Can you help me out?" And Joe jumps in the hole with him. The guy says, "What are you, stupid? Now we're both down here." And Joe says, "Yeah, I've been down here before. And I know the way out." That story has helped me to understand a little bit about my journey out of the hole. Because, well, to use another movie reference, this time from The Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood, in the spring of 2004, I dropped my basket. I was struggling to make sense of my life. On one hand, a corporate drone shuffled from New York to Connecticut to North Carolina, working too many hours in a dog-eat-dog world with no release. Versus my spiritual life, screaming to get out as a queer spiritual woman longing for connection, missing loved ones both alive and deceased, feeling broken and divided. I was exhausted trying to balance this divided life. I burned out and fell into a major depression. As I sought treatment and began to look for the way out of my hole, I found many messages about how to become whole again. Madison Avenue and the self-help industry had plenty of ideas and told me that wholeness was everything and could be achieved for a price. Yet the more I heard how I had to fix my holes and fix my flaws, the deeper in the hole I got, and the more broken I felt. This desire for wholeness caused more pain, because like so many of the Madison Avenue promises, wholeness, well, the way it's sold anyway, was a myth. So what does that mean for getting out of the hole? If wholeness isn't the way, what can we do? I know I was really deep, and I had no idea how I was going to get out. And then someone or something jumped into the hole. It was a book called The Joy of Burnout by psychologist Dina Glauberman. Now, in her book, Glauberman talks about the physical and the mental and the psychological exhaustion that comes from our drive to be everything, do everything, take care of everything, balance everything. But instead of calling us to fix the problems that led us to burnout, she suggests that we can get out of the hole by learning from the burnout. The first lesson is very simply, wait. It's okay to breathe. Waiting means we have to give up the struggle, to take a break, to breathe, to listen. Waiting isn't easy because in the waiting, still in the whole, things still seem awful and hurtful and impossible and empty. We are broken, not whole. We are profane, not sacred. We are ugly, not beautiful. But the waiting gives us time to hear what might help us. In my case, it was a comment in the middle of something else that Glauberman was talking about, but it stopped me in my tracks. Here's what she wrote. I asked life that tormenting question. Why is it that you always give me everything but the thing I really want? Life, like a good Jewish mother, answered a question with a question and said, why is it whatever I give you, you still complain? I realized that my whole was telling me that I had nothing, was nothing, and was always going to get nothing. But as I pondered this line, I wondered, what do I have? I didn't think I had anything. So I decided, all right, life, I'll show you. I'm gonna make a list. And so I pulled out a piece of paper and a pen, and I began. And I wrote, pen, paper. And then the sofa I was sitting on. And then my cat jumped up, and so I got a cat. And then the bookshelf across the room. And oh yeah, the magazine subscriptions. And if I look at the desk over there, I see pens and markers and a computer and a mug from my alma mater, a picture taken with my ex in England. And soon the paper was filled to the brim. I began to sort them out into what seemed like good categories. You know, creative, intelligence, family. And I realized that what I had was not just what I needed, food, shelter, employment, health insurance that covered mental health, thank God. I also had a lot of things higher on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Friends, families, hobbies, transportation, security. And those things began to point to the intangibles. A sense of humor, an artist's passion, a love of language, curiosity, compassion, and a sense of connection to something bigger, something we might call hope. And then Glauberman's second lesson is give up hope. As she explains, though, giving up hope is letting go. She says it's the opposite of hopelessness. Because it is trusting in ourselves and what we may be given, half a chance, and loads of patience. It's about forgiveness and relieving pressure. And mostly, it's about giving up hope for a better past. I'll repeat that. It's giving up hope for a better past. I gave up hope when I realized I couldn't go back to corporate America. I couldn't bring loved ones back from the dead. I couldn't change the choices I'd made for good or ill. I could only learn from what I had done and experienced. I could only keep the faith, which is Glauberman's third lesson. Keeping the faith is about surrender, deciding that we can trust ourselves, and that we are already whole. I'm already whole? Are you kidding? I'm a mess. I'm broken. I'm cracked up. I'm terrible. And that's when a voice whispered, "That's how the light gets in," from Leonard Cohen's song Anthem. Soon after, I met a Hindu goddess named Akilandeshvari. You don't have to repeat it after me. It took me a while to learn how to say it myself. But Ishvari in Sanskrit means goddess or female power. And the Akilanda means essentially never not broken. In other words, the always broken goddess. You see her sometimes depicted as pieces of a puzzle not quite put together. As writer Julie Peters notes, Akilanda derives her power from being broken, in flux, pulling herself apart, living in different constant selves at the same time, from never becoming a whole that has limitations. The thing about going through broken times is that one of the things you lose is your future, your expectations of what the story of your life so far was going to become. And of course, this is terrifying. But Akilanda invites us to make a choice in how to move forward. We gave up hope for a better past, so our stories about the past don't dictate how we go forward. We're in flux, flowing in new ways with this incredible opportunity to decide how we want to put the pieces back together. We have the choice to hide the brokenness with carefully hidden repairs and a new coat of paint, or honor the brokenness like those Japanese bowls Peter Mayer just sang about, mended in celebration with copper, gold, and silver. Because no matter how we treat the cracks, we get to put ourselves back together in new ways. No matter what anyone else says or thinks about how we're doing it, no matter how many times we are told we are broken or ugly or worthless, whether those messages come from others or from ourselves, every broken bit of ourselves is our key to wholeness, full of cracks, differently beautiful. When I started putting the pieces back together differently out of my own divided life, I realized that just saying goodbye to corporate America, to exhaustion and to negativity, and to North Carolina itself was not enough. I could do some of this work on my own, but I couldn't do it all alone. In his book, A Hidden Wholeness, Parker Palmer says, "The journey toward inner truth is too taxing to be made solo. Lacking support, the solitary traveler soon becomes weary or fearful and is likely to quit the road. The path is too deeply hidden to be traveled without company. Finding our way requires the kind of discernment that can only happen in dialogue. We need community to find the courage to venture into the alien lands to which the inner teacher may call us." And so in the fall of 2004, I came back to community, both to where the rest of my family lived in southern Saratoga County, but also to the UU congregation of Saratoga Springs, a perfect place for me to be held in the expansive embrace of our faith, a faith that teaches us that our very humanness means we have inherent worth and dignity, and that there is always a place for us, even in our brokenness. As the Reverend Robert Walsh writes, universalists believe that the fate of a human being was like that. No matter how rough the trip might have been, or how badly you might have behaved, at the end you would come home, and it would be a place of trust, safety, and love. Not just that congregation, not just my family, but in the very totality of life, the universe, and everything, a place of trust, safety, and love where I can be never not broken. I am whole. You are whole. Holy and sacred, full of holes and whole. Every single one of us with the cracks and scars that are evidence of a life lived through grief, trauma, sadness, and illness. Every single one of us going through things no one else could imagine. Every single one of us always in flux, always putting ourselves together differently. Every single one of us with our own stories of how we got out of that hole. Every story sacred and valuable and meaningful. Every single one of us, never not broken, but instead called as always, despite of and because of our cracks, to love anyway. Theologian Henri Nouwen says this: the great mystery of love is that we are not asked to live as if we are not hurting, as if we are not broken. In fact, we are invited to recognize our brokenness as a brokenness which we can come in touch with the unique way that we are loved. The great invitation is to live your brokenness under the blessing. I cannot take people's brokenness away, and people cannot take my brokenness away. But how do you live in brokenness? Do you live your brokenness under the blessing or under the curse? The great call of love is to put your brokenness under the blessing. In the blessing of brokenness, we can find a measure of comfort, a call to grace and joy. Joy in having made it out of the hole. Joy in helping others out. Joy in loving. Joy in the very complex, beautiful brokenness of life itself. We are meant not to be perfectly whole, but to be humans in our messy humanness, growing into harmony with the divine and each other. As the Reverend Beth Lefevre writes, we are whole even in the broken places, even where it hurts. We are whole even in the places where fear impedes our full engagement with life, where self-doubt corrupts our self-love, where shame makes our faces hot and our souls cold. We are whole even in those places where perfectionism blunts the joy of full immersion, where good enough does not reside except in our silent longings, where our gaps must be fast filled with substance, accomplishment, or frenzied activity. We are whole where we would doubt our own goodness, richness, fullness, and depth, where we would doubt our own significance, our own profoundness. We are whole even in our fragility, even where we feel fragmented, insubstantial, insufficient. We are whole even as we are in process, even as we stumble, even as we pick ourselves up again. For we are whole. We are human. We are holy. We are whole.